secondary schools to study at in Germany, and published with a group of her fellow students, six women, under the imprint Unica T, which is how I first encountered the work of Innes at the Frankfurt Book Fair in the year 2000. Innes's prime method of working is with the camera and in the medium of the book. In 1997, from 1997 until 2006, she collaborated with her friend Peter Malutsky on the second Encyclopedia of Tlön. This is a 10-year-long production. 5 books per year were produced over 10 years. And of course, as we all know from the title, they were influenced by the works of Borges. Innes also works as a graphic designer. She has shown us a tremendous range of possibility, and I think as we are now going to move, as they say, on beyond Tlön. So here we go.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for your introduction. It's great to be here, having the opportunity to talk about my work.
I want you to write her name down.
I would like to present the
poem
"Fart Vixen,"
I want you to write her name
which
down.
Means color change in English, on which I have worked from 2011 to 2013. The project consists of 6 volumes printed in an edition of 33. Each book is dedicated to a single color. Great. Starting out from classic color theory, I placed the colors yellow, green, blue, and red between white and black. The project gave me an opportunity to work on the subject of color in different ways. I assigned appropriate topics, texts, and pictures to the individual colors with photography, printing ink, and colored papers playing a role. The 6 books have an identical format, about 17 to 12 inches, but differ in the handling. Some are horizontal, some upright format, one is a concertina. The book titles are always printed to overlap the front cover, spine, and back cover. Here, for example, the yellow one. Likewise, the project's title, Farbwechsel, is printed running across the spine of the cloth-covered clamshell box, which contains the 6 volumes. I would like to begin with the white book. White is the combination of all colors in the visible spectrum. The Inuit people are said to have about 200 different names for the color white, according to shade and condition of their white environment. In Eastern cultures, as in Japan, for example, white is the color of mourning and death. When the catastrophic tsunami in Japan occurred in 2011 and struck the Fukushima nuclear power plant, I began collecting photographs and headlines. By looking for international online newspapers reporting on the impact of the tsunami and the nuclear chain reaction at Fukushima, I realized that I would have to follow the development of a longer period of time, and I decided on the period of a year, from March 11, 2011 to March 11, 2012. Can you see anything?
Yeah.
On the anniversary, March 11, 2012, I concluded the collection and had to make selections from the huge amount of pictures and texts. Also made subjectively by me, I felt the selection should include many different voices from various countries and languages. I had to have high contrast film made of the photographs to then be able to make polymer plates in our darkroom. Next, these were printed on our proof press in letterpress with white ink on white paper. Because all of the photographs were in horizontal format, I decided to also lay out the book in a horizontal format, opening upwards. On the top of the spread, there is the date in the respective language, while the bottom page contains the corresponding picture. The handset dates in 72-point condensed block are likewise printed with white ink by letterpress. In spite of the different white shades of paper and printing ink, the monochrome white-white print result is difficult to read. Photographs and typography are only well visible under certain light conditions. This was obviously my intention and is an important aspect of the book. The 24 explanatory headlines of the respective dates I've used in their different languages appear together on a spread at the end of the book. The yellow book contains a complete chapter by H.C. Artmann's tale Die Sonne war ein grünes Ei, in English, The Sun was a Green Egg. It's a funny, surrealistic genesis about the creation of the world and its objects. It is about the jealous relationship of sun, moon, and a certain object, as well as the genesis of stars and falling stars. I quote an English translation. I have tethered you to this tree at the border between the first and the second sky, said the moon, so that you won't violate the sun again when I have business elsewhere. Then he took a star out of the fabric of the sky. He put it into the object's mouth. And now, not another word, said the moon. The object bit this star in two, like a weak nut. It spit out a myriad of small stars. They fell upon the earth and scattered widely. These were the first falling stars ever seen. In Artmann's original book, the text is about 3 pages long. In my yellow book, it is printed with 20 scissor wooden letters, thus bringing it up to 88 pages, demanding a large number of press runs, especially when many E's were needed and my typecase didn't have enough. 2 press runs per page were always necessary due to the overlapping, but often there were 3 or sometimes even 4 press runs. As not more than 5 or 6 of the large wooden letters fit into a line, I couldn't break the lines by dividing words according to syllables. Printed with yellow ink on yellow paper, the text at first sight seems more like a pattern, but it is still legible. For the reader, it is a totally different experience than reading a paperback. It is more of a deciphering. Even a practiced reader might feel transported back to the times of his first childhood reading experiences. But anyway, the pages can also be looked at as yellow pictures. Someone unacquainted with our writing system would surely experience it like that. It was this ambivalence that interests me in the book. Typeface as a vehicle for content, and typeface as pure shape or texture. The Green Book contains a text passage from Virginia Woolf's To the Lighthouse. I quote, turning back among the many leaves which the past had folded in him, peering into the heart of that forest where light and shade so checker each other that all shape is distorted, and one blunders, now with the sun in one's eyes, now with a dark shadow. He sought an image to cool and detach and round off his feeling in a concrete shape. I've tried to visualize the topic of dissolved shapes, abstract symbols, the recognition of a letter shape, and the form of words. I try to explain my way of doing this on the example of the last 2 words of Virginia Woolf's text, Concrete Shape. At the computer, I have divided letter for letter of the text in 2 parts. All letters were cut individually in 2 parts, so that the fragments of each letter look different, Here, the three E's, as you see, no E was treated the same. This procedure I used for the complete text, which was quite a lot of work. Then the two fragment levels were printed digitally in different shades of green on two transparent foils. Finally, in the bound book, they are lying over each other, but the fragments are a bit shifted, so the reader has to shift the foils until they converge, thus making the text legible. Green papers in different shades are bound in as divider sheets between the foils. An important aspect that I found interesting in this book was the neurological process of reading. Science has meanwhile found out astonishing things in this area. Practiced readers are able to complete even heavily fragmented letter shapes through cognitive supplementation while reading. In his book, Reading the Brain, the French neuroscientist Stanislas Dehaene writes about the active deciphering of letters. I quote, "In a fraction of a second, with no apparent effort, our brain resolves a visual recognition problem that still defies current computer software. The parallel processing of all the word's characters, the clever resolution of ambiguities, the immediate access to one out of perhaps 50,000 words in the mental lexicon, all point to the remarkable adaptation of our brain to the task of reading." At the end of the book, you see the spread with the German translation of the complete text in a smaller type size. I'd like to say something about the binding. Because of the foils, I could not use glue for the binding. So paper and foils were directly sewn to a cloth. This has the added advantage that the book can be easily opened in spite of the stiff foils. Now the blue one. For this book, I took pictures of fishes in the aquarium of the Frankfurt Zoo. I used time exposure, a technique I have used for many of my projects. Time exposure interests me because it captures a phase of time that we normally cannot perceive. In contrast to pictures taken with a short exposure time, which more or less freeze the motif and show it in the expected sharpness, it depicts the motif over a longer period of time. Movements are blurred, that dissolve in time. Because of the time exposure, light, time, positions, and situations are added together. These layers visualize movements in sequence. I use different methods for time exposure. Sometimes I work with a tripod. The photographs for the blue book were made without a tripod. So to the movements of the objects in front of the lens was added the movement of the camera itself. For example, when I followed the movements of the fishes. Fishes that moved slowly or remained in a position are more easily recognized in the picture than those that were swimming fast. Even though the fishes were there and swam through the picture, they can sometimes completely disappear, not leaving any light trace. Their time within the field of view was too short to form an image on the sensor of my camera. Onto the photographs, I have printed a poem by Hans Arp. I quote an English translation. "How convenient would sky blue souls and sky blue songs come in? What wings would these be? And an angel should hold the star rings. How we yearn for this great journey." The photographs are printed in offset, the poem in letterpress using transparent ink. So the text gets its color by the underlying photograph. The glossiness of the transparent ink lets you easily read the typeface on the photograph. Inspired by Giuseppe Tornatore's movie Cinema Paradiso, I began collecting kiss scenes for the Red Book. The movie is set in a small Catholic village in Italy during the 40s. It is about the history of cinema and movie, and there is this wonderful story about censored kiss scenes. For my book, I took kiss photographs from the television screen. I had to watch many Hollywood movies until finally I had enough pictures. That means suitable kisses for the book. My idea was that in the book, all women should kiss all men, and all men should kiss all women. From a large number of photographs, four couples remained at the end, from four real kissing scenes. That's number one, two, three, and four. Couple number five is not from a real kissing scene. It's Charlie Chaplin and Liz Taylor.
And his what?
And Liz Taylor.
Charlie actually kisses little Jackie Coogan in the movie The Kid. But that didn't fit into my girl meets boy and boy meets girl concept. So I added Liz Taylor. But she has to go without Richard Burton, whom she actually kisses in Cleopatra. This sounds complicated, but it's actually very simple. Have a look at my storyboard. I've used to decide who kisses whom, when, and in which lipstick color. But I think these are not lipstick colors. It looks more brown and so on. In the book, it's really lipstick colors. When the five actresses finally have kissed each one of the five actors, and the five actors finally have kissed each one of the five actresses, then we should have 25 kissing couples at the end. Unfortunately, as you already can see here, the book structure doesn't allow this, meaning there are actually only 23 kissing couples. Poor Peter O'Toole and poor Marilyn Monroe once have to kiss the papers. The black book is a concertina printed on both sides. Unfolded, it has a length of about 31 feet. I took black and white photographs in the city of Frankfurt. Again, I used the technique of time exposure. The pictures were taken while walking without looking through the viewfinder of the camera. Even though I consciously chose the environment and the motifs, serendipity played a great role, and at the end, I selected, out of a large number, those pictures that suited my concept. La Notte, a text by Giorgio Manganelli, gave me the inspiration for the book. I have used the Italian original and a German translation. To give you an idea of the text, I quote a short part in an English translation. First, we are often asked which shape Sad Night has, if the Appalachian shape is even justified for Sad Night, and if this shape, provided there is one, is constant and immovable, and finally, if it is measurable. According to the impression of those who busied themselves with this, Sad Night has the shape of a cuboid. End of quote. Said cuboid shape gave me the idea to print a slightly translucent black letterpress rectangle with a polymer plate onto my offset printed night photographs. The significantly darker letterpress black creates a second level on the offset photograph, but the photograph beneath is still visible through the overprint. Manganelli's text appears in some of the black rectangles. The typeface is negative on the polymer plate and seems on the print sometimes lighter, sometimes darker, due to the structure of the photograph beneath, shaped by the picture. Thank you very much. Oh.
Thank you. few questions for Ines, anyone?
I think we do have time, right?